we're the Denver Broncos cheerleaders, and you're listening to Sports Crunch with D-Crom.
Cats and kittens are. This is Sports Crunch with D-Crom. I'm your host, David Cromwell. Well, the NFL free agent frenzy has begun in earnest. That means draft boards are about to become much more clear for all 32 teams. And with just over 6 weeks to go until the first overall pick is read by Roger Goodell at Union Station in Kansas City, we begin our annual position-by-position breakdowns of the 2023 draft class with a look at the quarterbacks. While this year's crop of signal callers is markedly better than that of 2022, it lacks a Trevor Lawrence-level prospect. But nonetheless, it would be quite a surprise, if not a shock, if four of them do not hear their names called within the first 10 picks. And I hate to sound like a broken record, but what better guy is there to help us analyze these potential NFL franchise quarterbacks than our good friend, Mark Schofield, who currently resides at SB Nation. It's always the ultimate treat having you with us, Mark. How you doing, my man?
I am doing well, David. It is fantastic to be here, as always. As we said sort of before we started talking, before we started recording, you know, this is the first day of the legal tampering period. And so, you know, things might be a little bit different by the time we get around to the draft. I mean, we did have a Jimmy Garoppolo move to Las Vegas to play for the Raiders on a 3-year deal. And so maybe that impacts what the Raiders do at seven. But like you said, it wouldn't surprise me at all if we see three quarterbacks in the top five, four quarterbacks in the top 10. I think that is the way this is going to go. So it is a marked difference than last year when we just had Kenny Pickett in the first round. So makes it a more enjoyable class to discuss overall, but it's always enjoyable to be with you, my friend.
Oh, absolutely, Mark. And by the way, you were just at the scouting combine in Indianapolis. How was your time there?
It was fantastic. It was fantastic. And I think what was good about this year, the scheduling was different. A lot of people went early because the head coaches, general managers, they met with the media on Tuesday and Wednesday. Part of the reason why I'm here, I tracked the quarterbacks. And so I didn't go until Thursday. Quarterbacks met the media on Friday. They worked out on Saturday. I was in the building on Saturday for Anthony Richardson's workout, for CJ Stroud's throwing session, for some of these other quarterbacks and what they did. It was fantastic to see that in person because unlike other positions, the quarterback workout, you can get something from that. You can see the way the ball pops out of their hand. You can see the rhythm to their footwork, to their, you know, drops, to the timing and rhythm on throws. And I know we'll dive into that a little bit, but from my perspective, it was great to be in the building for that, to get to see that firsthand. It was a fantastic week, as it always is each year. Already looking forward to next year's, and it was just a fantastic opportunity to see these quarterbacks up close.
Oh, absolutely, and hopefully they keep it in Indianapolis. No reason to move it to LA. That's a far bigger, more congested city. Keep it in a smaller city.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why the NFL would love to have it. Obviously, they've built and they're expanding the campus, everything they've got out there. They've moved a lot of their operation out to LA right by SoFi Stadium. But Indianapolis is a fantastic spot for not just really the combine, but really the more time I've spent in that city, there's a reason why there are Big Ten championship games and there'll be an NBA All-Star game there soon. And, you know, all sorts of conventions because everything is centralized. It's all walkable. I mean, for example, quick story, they stopped giving out credentials each day at noon. My flight landed at Indianapolis International Airport at 10:40 Thursday morning. I had my credential in hand by 11:15. I mean, you just get Uber right to downtown. In a flash, and you're not going to have that when you're out there in, say, Los Angeles or even some other places. There was some talk recently about potentially going to Dallas for the combine or moving the combine around. But when you can go from Lucas Oil to the convention center to the JW Marriott, where most people end up congregating at the end of the night without even going outside because it's all connected by skyways and walkways, It's a nice little landing spot for it. So I hope they keep it in Indianapolis. It's more than just the St. Elmo shrimp cocktail. There's a lot more reasons why they have it in Indianapolis. The access to the downtown hospital where they do the medical testing. It's a very conducive environment to getting everything done that the NFL needs to do during that week.
Oh, fantastic points all, Mark. You really hit the nail on the head as to why the NFL should not consider moving the combine out of Indianapolis whatsoever. And speaking of Indianapolis hotels, it was at another Indianapolis hotel where the blockbuster trade that came to the surface on Friday started to be born. And that blockbuster trade was the Bears trading away the first overall pick of the draft to the Carolina Panthers for picks 9 and 61 this year, a first-round pick in 2024, a second-round pick in 2025, and wide receiver DJ Moore. And most in the NFL believe the quarterback the Panthers traded up to get is Ohio State's CJ Stroud. And when you look at Stroud, he may be the most fundamentally sound, pure passer in this class, given his pinpoint accuracy. And you got to witness it on hand at the combine during his workout. But however, for most of the college football season, many, if not most analysts, believe that his upside was limited due to his inability to create outside of structure. But in that epic college football playoff game against Georgia, he constantly made plays off script. Did C.J. Stroud's Herculean performance against that Kirby Smart Georgia defense convince you that there is far more untapped potential with him?
Actually, David, it didn't, because I already thought that he had that in him. And it's interesting, when he spoke with the media on Friday in Indianapolis during the combine, he talked a lot about just not just that game and the plays that he made, because he faced a lot of questions about the performance against Georgia. He talked a lot really about how playing from the pocket was something that was instilled in him at a young age. He talked about his youth football coach, who said you had to make plays from the pocket. You have to be a pocket quarterback. You have to be a pocket passer. You have to be able to make a throw on third down. You can't just rely on your athleticism. He talked a lot about his high school coach, who drilled into him the idea of precision ball placement. He called himself a ball placement specialist. And so, you know, he talked about his background and his upbringing and the way he learned to play the position as a way of framing the fact that he believes that his job, first and foremost, is to spread the ball around and get the ball to his receivers. As he said, look, if Marvin Harrison Jr. is wide open and I don't throw it to him, I'm going to hear it from him. You know, if guys like JSN and some of the other great receivers he's had the luxury of throwing to are open and I don't get him the ball, I'm not doing my job. But he also talked about how, look, should I have perhaps used my athleticism more? Yeah. Do I kind of regret that? Yeah. But if you watch me, you'll see moments of it. I had some tough third down runs. I had some tough fourth down runs. And so I was already of the mindset, David, that there's more to him than just a prototypical pocket passer, that he did have some athleticism, and he did show you that in bits and spurts. Of course, doing it against Georgia in his final collegiate game in a college football playoff against a defense that – you know, was the best defense in the country, you know, a year ago. Some of those great players were back and was one of the best defenses in the country again this year against a Kirby Smart coach defense that is as close as you can get perhaps at an NFL type experience, and going up against a talented, schematically, a talented in terms of personnel defense. To be able to have that kind of performance, I think, was huge. And I think it certainly opened a lot of eyes. But I was already very impressed with him overall, and already thought before that game that there is more to him as a quarterback than people are perhaps giving him credit for. And what's been interesting, even after Indianapolis and the combine, there's still a lot of excitement about Anthony Richens, who I know we're going to talk about. There's still excitement about Bryce Young. And Bryce Young, while he didn't work out or anything, he did what he needed to do in Indianapolis. And Stroud has sort of flown under the radar a little bit. But I'm extremely impressed with him. You know, he's my top quarterback. I think what we saw in his throwing session was the rhythmic nature of him as a passer. It's almost musical. It's almost artistic in a way. It's just so fluid and so smooth, and there's no wasted movement. And he puts the football where it needs to be more often than not, not just, you know, putting it to the right receiver, but away from leverage, away from the nearest defender, away from coverage. He's a very complete prospect in my mind. And if he's the pick at one, it wouldn't surprise me. Now, some of these other guys could certainly be the pick at one, too. It could be Young. It could be Richardson. It could be Levis. I mean,
yeah, these are four very good passers.
That's, you know, the ownership. You know, there's reported out there that ownership likes him, that Frank Reich likes him. I mean, it's a stark contrast to last year, because all four of these guys that we're talking about as the top four, you can make a coherent, well-argued case that any one of them could be your QB1. I might not agree with it, but I can understand that. It's not like last year where it was a lot more up in the air. This year, there's four very good quarterbacks. For me, Stroud's one, and I think if Carolina came up to draft him, that's a great move. But the other thing to keep in mind about Carolina, they have put so much around the quarterback position. Frank Wright, Deuce Staley, Josh McCown, Parks Frazier, Jim Caldwell. They have put a brain trust around the quarterback position. Whoever they draft is going to be in good hands.
Oh, and don't forget Sean Jefferson, arguably the best wide receivers coach in the NFL as well. He'll be very beneficial to whoever they draft at one overall. And you talked about C.J. Stroud's beautiful mechanics. And I think there's a former Ohio State teammate of his that plays for the team that traded the number one pick to the Panthers. I think that former Ohio State teammate of his could benefit from talking him on the phone and watching some of his film from Ohio State, because the next step for Justin Fields in his development, and the Bears are confident that he's going to take, is to turn into more of that rhythm and timing passer that C.J. Stroud is.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the task ahead of Justin Fields this year. You know, I thought throughout the course of last season, he showed some strides as a quarterback from the pocket. Certainly at the athleticism is, you know, eye-popping at times. And he showed that obviously for the Chicago Bears. But I think what the Bears have done is very smart, you know, because I know there was some discussion in some corners, maybe they just stay at one and draft a quarterback. And I could understand why people might think, look, you know, you're now into year three of Justin Fields. If you're not sure if he's the guy, go get the guy that could be. But I think what they've done is put themselves in a position to continue to build around the quarterback position. You know, we just got done through the first day of legal tampering, and they've made some signings, mostly on the defensive side of the ball. They did add, you know, a guard to help build out that offensive line. I expect some more moves to come in the next couple of days, because they went into this free agency period and tampering period with the most cap space out of any team. But they've given themselves an opportunity to continue to build around the quarterback position. But also via this trade, they have given themselves that future first round pick, which is similar to what the Philadelphia Eagles did last year. And there's a distinct parallel between what the Eagles did last year and what the Bears are doing right now. Because I can remember standing, you know, 10 feet in front of Howie Roseman last year, you know, at the combine, and 10 feet in front of Nick Sirianni moments before that. And both those gentlemen said, we have a lot of draft capital. We have a lot of cap space. We're going to build around Jalen Hurts. And that's what they did. They added a veteran via a trade in A.J. Brown, similar to what the Bears just did with D.J. Moore. But what the Eagles also did was they gave themselves that future first-round pick, one of the two they have in this draft, which gave them an out in case it didn't come together for Jalen Hurts. That's what the Bears have done as well, because if it doesn't work, now you've added talent around the quarterback position. You've got the two firsts next year. You can go up and get a Drake May or a Caleb Williams or a Michael Penix or whoever their top quarterback is. And now you've already built around that player. And so a new rookie comes in and they've got a nice environment to develop in. I believe that Justin Fields is going to take strides as a quarterback. I expect a year three leap from him. It may not be the same level as a Jalen Hurts or a Josh Allen or some other quarterbacks, but I expect to see strides from him because of what he's done himself, because of what he showed down the stretch last year, because of what they've put around the quarterback position already and what I anticipate they'll continue to put around the quarterback position. But Ryan Poles has also given himself that hedge that if it doesn't click the way I'm expecting, they've got an opportunity in next year's draft to then draft a quarterback and put him in a much more favorable environment. Because if they just stayed put and drafted Bryce Young or CJ Stroud, you wouldn't have the draft capital. You could have added via free agency, but you wouldn't have put as much around that player as they can do right now with Justin Fields.
Oh, your comparison to what the Bears just did, to what the Eagles did last year, is absolutely spot on, Mark. And back to the quarterback class. While the Carolina Panthers may prefer CJ Stroud or Will Levis, the consensus top quarterback in this draft when it comes to the NFL in general seems to be Alabama's Bryce Young. And there's a very strong argument that Bryce Young has the best tape out of any quarterback in this class. However, he measured it at a shade under 5'11", and he has a pretty narrow frame that can likely only carry a tad above 200 pounds. And as we can learn from Russell Wilson's steep decline in 2022, height still matters for quarterbacks. However, Bryce Young, unlike Russell Wilson, throws between the hashes regularly, and you could say his play style is more similar to Drew Brees than that of the former short quarterback. And given what you have seen from Bryce Young on tape, do you think he has a very good chance to be successful for an even longer period of time in the NFL than Russell Wilson was?
I think so. I mean, the reasons why he's, as you sort of mentioned, at least up until, say, the past couple of days, or at least the combine, you know, was the sort of consensus QB1. There are a lot of things that he does that draw your eyes, that are the splashy, that sort of fit with what we see from the NFL today, which is the ability to create outside the pocket, the ability to sort of, there are moments of like sort of crazy pocket management where, you know, he's facing 2, 3, 4 points of pressure in the pocket, but navigating it while keeping his eyes downfield the entire time, doesn't drop his eyes, you know, fluid in the pocket, impervious to pressure around him. You know, those are the things that certainly catch your attention and mesh with where the game is trending at the quarterback position. But then you see moments where it's just feel of concepts, feel of routes, you know, looking defenders off with his eyes, underneath feel, you know, feel of underneath defenders, and that ability to throw between the numbers over the middle. Are there moments where you can like sort of nitpick and say, oh, well, he's got this drive concept and, you know, he doesn't see it, you know? Yeah, but you could find that with any quarterback. I think that there are more moments when he's attacking the middle of the field, which is something you don't always see from collegiate quarterbacks. And so you piece this all together and it's a very solid quarterback prospect that not only does the things that are in the, that fit with the way the game is trending, but he can also do the things from the pocket that you sometimes worry about with a smaller in height quarterback, a quarterback that can't see the middle of the field. And I say this as a 5'10" ish man who played the quarterback position. There were moments when I did not see the middle of the field. And, you know, the NFL is a much, much different game than Division III football. And believe me, I know that one, and I was bad at Division III. But it matters. Height does matter. If you can't see the middle of the field, and interestingly enough, a lot of my receivers would tell me sometimes they couldn't see me. They couldn't see where the ball was coming from because they couldn't see me behind the line. Young does a very good job at finding throwing lanes. He does a very good job at attacking the middle of the field. And so I think he can play in the NFL. I think he can play at a very high level in the NFL. People might then say, well, why is he, you know, your QB2 instead of QB1? I just like CJ Stroud more, but he's a very good quarterback prospect. And I think what he did at the combine in Indianapolis was come in at a measurement that makes him an outlier, not the outlier. And what I mean by that is this: if he had come in 5'9", 195, that's the historic outlier at the quarterback position. You know, coming in at 5'10 and an eighth, 204, that's in line with Kyler Murray. That's in line with Baker Mayfield, quarterbacks that went first overall. So you're drafted a quarterback that, yes, he's an outlier from what we've seen historically, but he's not the historical outlier at the position. That matters because if you're a general manager who might be worried about losing their job, you know, if you're drafting somebody that's the historical outlier at the position, it's a bit riskier. You know, if you're drafting somebody that is in line with Kyler, is in line with Baker from a height and weight perspective, I think it's a more defendable position if it doesn't work out. And so I think he can play at a high level. I know there are concerns about frame and things like that, so you might want to have a better offensive line around him. You know, it might sort of limit how much you're going to use him in the run game. You might more pick your spots. You know, he's not certainly not built like, I say, Jalen Hurts, who's a very stocky, you know, tough runner. And even he had some injury issues this year. And so you're going to sort of pick your spots there, but he's a very good quarterback, very good quarterback prospect. I'm excited to see where he ends up.
Oh, I'm very excited to see Bryce Young as well. And many NFL draft nicks absolutely love putting player comps on prospects. And the most common player comp I've heard for Bryce Young is somebody outside the football world. Steph Curry, who I think we can now say is the best pure shooter, not just in NBA history, but in the history of the entire sport of basketball. Are you a fan of that comp?
I'm a fan of it, David, because it's outside the norm. You know, I'm not a fan of comps generally. Matter of fact, my buddy over at SB Nation, JP Acosta, has done a great job so far of making anime comps, comparing prospects to anime characters. He's done like two pieces on that so far, and they've been amazing. And he's going to do a couple more before the draft, you know, because we all sort of see the same comps. The Steph Curry one is interesting because it's sort of outside the norm, and there's something to that with the way they both play the game. You know, I can get behind that one.
Absolutely. Bryce Young and Steph Curry, they play different sports, but they both have elite vision. They're marksmen in how they throw the ball, and with Steph, how he shoots the ball. So the basics are there. I totally agree with you there. And you mentioned that you have CJ Stroud ranked ahead of Bryce Young on your board. Why is that? Is it because of Young's size, or is it because of other things?
It's just because I like Stroud that much. You know, we often sort of get caught up in a wall. If you've got one player, one, and another two, you must not like two. It's like, no, I like all four of these top quarterbacks. I just like Stroud the most. I think he's sort of the most complete package. You know, he's an advanced passer with his ball placement. I think there's the athleticism issue that we talked about. You know, you see him working through reads, working through progressions and all of that stuff. And, you know, there are moments where he flashes that athleticism on film. And I think it just sort of went under the radar. And so while I like Bryce Young, while I like Richardson, while I like Will Levis, I just really like CJ Stroud.
Yeah, there is definitely a lot to like about CJ Stroud. But now on to another one of the four quarterbacks expected to go in the top 10 picks. Headed into the combine, as I'm sure you know, no prospect received more hype than Florida quarterback Anthony Richardson. And he more than warranted that hype in his on-field workouts, as you saw, setting records for the quarterback position, both the broad jump at 10'9" and the vertical jump at 40.5". And he ran a 4.44 second 40 at 244 pounds. And he unofficially posted an absolute perfect RAS score of 10, making him arguably the most freakishly athletic quarterback prospect in modern memory. And teams are willing to bet on traits more than ever at the quarterback position these days. However, when it comes to playing the game of football, one could say that Richardson is raw as sushi. He only threw the ball 393 times at Florida and posted an awful completion percentage of 54.7. And as you know, the list of quarterbacks with completion percentages substantially below 60 in college succeeding at the NFL level is very slim. Brett Favre, Jake Delhomme, and most recently, Josh Allen. However, Daniel Jeremiah noted during the NFL Network Combine broadcast that Richardson's accuracy issues may not be mainly to blame for that dreadful number. And he also noted that before the Combine, he's a top two quarterback on the boards of several teams. Do you agree with Daniel Jeremiah and those respective ball clubs that Anthony Richardson has a very, very good shot to become the latest rare exception to that rule?
I do. And I also think that, you know, I've heard, you know, some idea that, you know, he's 2 years away, that he needs a lot of time. I almost think it's the opposite. You know, I think he just needs more reps more than anything else. And what's interesting about Richardson is sometimes with a quarterback, you see inaccuracy and it's because their eyes are late. And by the time they get their eyes to where they need to be on a route, on a concept, on a read, on a throw, that they have to really force things. And that's when their mechanics sort of fall to pieces and the ball placement goes out the window. Richardson's eyes, for the most part, are where they need to be when they need to be there. It's kind of the feet that are a little bit behind it. So the mind is there. And that makes me think that it's not an issue that he needs to learn. It's just an issue that he needs more practice at getting the feet to move along with his eyes. So I think it's more he's inexperienced, not that he's raw. And a lot of people have also said, okay, well, great. So he has a 40.5-inch vertical. So he has this 11-foot broad. So he's an explosive athlete. What does that have to do with throwing the football or reading a defense? Well, I'll tell you what it has to do with it. He's an explosive athlete. And how that helps him is this. That explosiveness leads to torque in the upper body, which leads to velocity on his throws. which gives him an extra, say, half second to three quarters of a second to read out a concept before he has to throw it, because that explosiveness as an athlete will translate into velocity, which means if he's reading a concept and Colt McCoy is reading a concept, Colt's got to get the ball out maybe a second sooner to get the ball there at the same time that Anthony Richardson will, if Anthony Richardson still uses that extra second to sort of read it out. That's how that explosiveness comes into play. It will give him more time in the pocket. And if you need an example of who that's worked for, Josh Allen. Josh Allen, also an explosive athlete. Josh Allen, who had similar completion percentage concerns coming out of Wyoming. But when you watch Josh Allen his rookie year, even his second year, you know, before that third year leap that we saw from him, there were moments when he could wait on a route concept a second longer, but still get the ball where it needed to be because of that explosiveness, because of that torque, which led to the velocity, that torque in his upper body and in his throwing motion. So that's how his combat, how Richardson's combine performance matters. And there's also an idea that, look, we tend to think that athleticism at the quarterback position might set the ceiling. It could also set the floor, you know, because it's also going to give him that extra time in the pocket. It's also going to give him one heck of an out if things break down, and he can then turn to his 4.4 40-yard dash and that explosiveness as an athlete. And so I understand why teams are very excited about him, and I understand why we left Indianapolis and had a legitimate discussion about him going first overall. And I understand why Friday afternoon, when the Panthers trade came down, there were some that said this is for Richardson, because that's a lot to like in a quarterback prospect. Does he need work? Absolutely. But if you're Carolina, and like we just talked about, you've put so much around the quarterback position, you think you can develop any one of these guys, why not then take that bet on Richardson?
Oh, yeah. Plus, he might not have weapons to throw to, at least as of right now, if he goes to the Panthers, but he has a very promising, mauling offensive line that fits perfectly with his style.
Yeah, I mean, look, they brought their entire offensive line back because they just, you know, got a new deal with their center today. And so, you know, you could imagine that it's going to be, you know, you think of some offenses very similar to, say, the Eagles last year, where it's a run-heavy offense. They're going to lean into the quarterback run game. They're going to lean into the idea of getting plus one, plus two in the box, you know, because when you use the quarterback as a run threat, you can get that numbers advantage. You sort of limit what the quarterback is going to have to do and sort of ease him into the NFL. I mean, there's an opportunity where if the Panthers do go in that direction, you could see him under center pretty early because of what they've put in front of the quarterback and how they can structure that offense around him.
Absolutely, and we can expect the Panthers to give Anthony Richardson a full and solicitous hearing when he makes his case to be that number one pick to them at his pro day and when they bring him into their facility for a visit. And another quarterback with super promising traits in this class is Kentucky's Will Levis. However, after a promising 2021 campaign, he turned in a very disappointing 2022. That said, many attribute his performance last year to a left foot injury and Kentucky changing offensive coordinators. Liam Cohn, I believe, left Lexington to become the Rams offensive coordinator last spring, and he's back at Kentucky now. But nonetheless, Levis also threw a jaw-dropping 23 interceptions during his 2 years in Lexington, and thus it's no surprise that NFL.com's Lanzier line listed Jay Cutler as his pro comp for Levis. Granted, as I mentioned earlier in the episode, word has it that he has many, and I mean many, fans of the NFL. Heck, I believe some teams said privately that they have him number one on their board. And among his fans, as I mentioned, include Panthers head coach Frank Reich. Do you think there's a good chance that whoever drafts Will Levis will get the version we saw nearly 2 years ago?
I think it's entirely possible. I don't know if I'd say good chance, but I think, you know, it's doable. You know, of the four, he's the one I'm most hesitant about. But there are still moments, whether it's the 21 tape or even the 22 tape, where you can see why teams are excited about him. You can see him running some NFL concepts. I mean, obviously, from Cohn and last year, Scangarello, like, he's running NFL concepts. You can see him get into reads quickly. You can see him working through reads quickly. You can see him on designs like, you know, weak side halfback option, get into that option route from the running back quickly. You can see him moving well in the pocket, keeping his eyes downfield. You know, there are moments where he's doing everything well, and then it's just one play that comes along and you're just like, I don't understand what he just did. And I don't know if he knows what he just did. There are situational awareness moments where, you know, you're just wondering, why is he doing this? They had, you know, a late game situation at Mississippi this year where, you know, it's first and goal with under a minute to go and they're trailing and you've got a chance, you know, with 56 seconds left to make a play. And, you know, he just forces one, you know, it's a slow development play. He has to know that he's got to get the ball out. He doesn't, he gets strip sacked and it's ball game. Like you've got to have a better awareness of the moment. And so you'd like to see him be better at plays like that and moments like that, but you could see some things where it's clicking. You know, you could see manipulation with his eyes. You could see him moving off defenders. His game, for example, against Missouri this year, early in the game, he's not using his eyes. He's staring things down. He's not getting through reads. And then it's like in the third quarter, it's like he remembered at halftime how to play. And then you see him working through reads. You see him, you know, using his eyes to manipulate safeties and even linebackers underneath. And so there's a good quarterback inside. I feel that. I believe that. It's just a question of, who can get it out of him? Who can get him back to that 21 version that we saw, even the good moments you saw in 22? And so, you know, that's why before the Panthers trade up, I thought if it ends up that he's QB4 and he ends up at Carolina, well, that's great because of all the reasons we talked about and everything the Panthers have done around the quarterback position. Now, there are still landing spots inside the top 10 that aren't Carolina where I think it could work. I mean, you know, I have my, you know, good things and bad things to say about Josh McDaniel. But he has shown, you know, that rookie year with Mac Jones, the ability to develop a quarterback a little bit. And so I think, you know, if he somehow lands up in Las Vegas, I think that could work. If Detroit decides, hey, you know, we're in a scenario where, you know, we don't expect to be picking this high again anytime soon, maybe we're going to stay at six and draft a quarterback, even though we have Jared Goff. Ben Johnson did some great things last year, you know, with Jared Goff. And so maybe that could be a landing spot as well. It could work for Will Levis. And so I think there's a good quarterback inside of him. I just want to see him land in a spot that's going to be able to get that out of it.
Yes. And how fixable do you think his turnover issues are?
I think they're fixable for the most part. I mean, you know, I tend to look at turnovers with a bit of a, you know, more of an open-minded approach because we've seen some college quarterbacks struggle with turnovers. And sometimes, you know, you've got to take some risks. You've got to, you know, take some chances with the football. So I'm not really scared about a quarterback that has 23 interceptions as he had in the past couple of years, provided they're appropriately aggressive plays. And for the most part, they are. You know, the turnovers that scare me more are like that in-game situation against Mississippi where it's a lack of awareness in a situation because, you know, that's something that scares me more than a guy thinking I can make this throw because I want them to be aggressive with taking decisions because I'm always of the mind that you can sort in. This is not to make a Patrick Mahomes comparison, but I remember with Mahomes coming out, people were saying, oh, he takes too many chances. And I remember thinking, look, I'd rather him take those risks now because it's easier to say, dial it back than it is to teach somebody that's been careful and conservative with the football to then get more aggressive. That's a harder thing to get somebody to do. So the fact that he's made some mistakes with the football, I'm okay with that because I think you could sort of coach that out and get them to take, you know, some better care of the football. And so that doesn't worry me. It's the situational awareness. Like I talked about that end game situation with Mississippi, that scares me more.
Thank you for another fantastic in-depth scouting report, Mark. Once again, this is why we have him on our show to talk quarterbacks. Nobody analyzes the position better than Mark Schofield. And although it is highly unlikely that more than four quarterbacks get selected in the first round, another quarterback that is apparently climbing up draft boards is Tennessee's Hendon Hooker. Hooker, as I'm sure you know, was absolutely balling, and I mean balling out this fall until a torn ACL prematurely ended his season and dashed whatever hopes he had to be a first-round selection. However, Ian Rappaport reported that he got very good medical reviews at the combine and is on track to be ready for the regular season opener. And in addition, ESPN draft analyst Matt Miller, formerly of Bleacher Report, reported over the weekend that he's heard from several teams that Hendon Hooker is absolutely knocking it out of the park on the whiteboard and in overall interviews, and he predicted that Hooker would go relatively early in the second round. If, say, the Seahawks, Raiders, and or Falcons, or Lions even, now that you mentioned the Lions, miss out on one of the top four quarterbacks in the first round, would Hendon Hooker be a worthy investment for them in the second round?
You know, David, I think so. It's interesting. Like, there are three sort of question marks that surround Hooker, and I've sort of followed him, you know, through this draft process. One is the knee injury, but like you said, you know, he's gotten favorable medical reports from based on the evaluations that took place in Indianapolis. There's even a thought that he could be ready to throw at a pro day in the next couple of weeks, which would be incredible coming off of a knee injury like he had late in the season. But the advances in medical technology are such that an ACL shouldn't scare teams off anymore. So that's one of the questions you could sort of at least address and have a rebuttal for. Another question is the age. He's an older prospect, but we're seeing older prospects because we're still coming out of the COVID years where players took an extra year. And with A, quarterbacks playing earlier in their careers, it's not like you're going to – it's not like the days gone by where you're going to hold a clipboard for 3 years and a 25-year-old prospect is 28 before he sees the field. Quarterbacks are playing sooner, and they're also playing those that stick in the NFL longer in their careers. And so I think the age argument isn't what it used to be. You know, the one argument that I think might carry the most weight with some teams is the idea of the offense that he ran. Josh Heupel's offense, you know, Heupel talked about it at length throughout his coaching career about, you know, he's taking portions from different playbooks, but, you know, there are some air raid Mike Leach influences. There's some Art Briles influences there. He's, you know, a former offensive coordinator or coach under Briles is part of that, was part of his staff at UCF. So he took those wide splits, the stacks like you used to see at Baylor. And so how much of that is really translatable to the NFL game? But you also see some NFL teams using some of those designs, maybe not the entirety of their passing game like you saw with Tennessee, but in bits and spurts. And so that could translate. And if we're hearing, you know, reports of having great whiteboard sessions, you have to think that either teams are just curious about that offense because they want to run it, or they want to see him break it down, or a little bit of both. That could be possible too. The fact that he's impressive in those whiteboard sessions, I think, is extremely important. So, you know, to the question about teams like, you know, Seattle, the Lions and Raiders and other teams that don't go quarterback early, I think Hooker is a very intriguing sort of, you know, day two quarterback, early day two quarterback that has done some nice things that, you know, that there might be some questions that he has to answer, and he's perhaps answered most of them already. But there are some things to like about his game. There are some, you know, throws that he made and some reads that he made. And, you know, you look at that Alabama game, and it's similar to CJ Stroud versus Georgia. You know, his game against Alabama, against a Nick Saban defense, it's as close as you can get as seeing what you're going to see in the NFL with the coverages and the things that they do. But, you know, you see him, you know, breaking defenses down quickly with throws and reads and decisions. You could see him move defenders, not just with his eyes, but sometimes he'll flash the ball, reset. Like he had a throw in the second quarter against Alabama where, you know, he's got the dig route. He flashes ball, gets the underneath defender to lean towards the underneath route, resets, drills in the dig, attacking the middle of the field like some other quarterbacks won't. Very impressive kind of play. And so I think he's a very solid quarterback prospect. And, you know, just taking a step back, quarterback five, I think, is the most intriguing part of this draft class, because we know who the top four are, and people can have QB1, QB2, QB3. Who's quarterback five? No, that's the most intriguing question, I think, in this entire draft class. Hooker has a case. Tanner McKee has a case. Some other guys might have a case, but who is QB5? I think that's the most fascinating question this draft season at the quarterback position.
Yes, and it's going to be very interesting to see where that quarterback five goes. Some people think it'll be Hendon Hooker in early round two. Benjamin Albright, our good friend at Sportsnaut and KOA Radio in Colorado, reported just a couple weeks ago that we shouldn't be surprised if no quarterbacks go on day two and the rest of them go on day three. So a lot of possibilities out there, and it's going to be fascinating to watch indeed. And he is Mark Schofield, ladies and gentlemen, of SB Nation. Follow him on Twitter at Mark Schofield. And Mark, thank you so much once again for joining us. But before we let you go, let's figure out some best possible team fits for these prospects, starting with CJ Stroud.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's my top guy. I think he could sort of fit anywhere. Before this Panthers trade was made, I thought, honestly, like if he ended up with the Raiders, that could work because I think Josh McDaniels would get a lot out of him. But I do think the Panthers are a very good fit for him, as they would be for all of these quarterbacks, given what we've talked about. So, you know, I'll say at one, the Carolina Panthers.
Absolutely, especially with that coaching staff, and they will get those weapons in due order to help his development. And what about Bryce Young? Do you think the Texans are a good spot for him?
I do think the Texans are a good spot. I mean, you know, I think Bryce Young is going to be a quarterback that's going to have success in the NFL for the reasons that we sort of talked about, you know, with what, you know, they've put around, you know, what he's done on film, the way he plays the game. I think there's a lot to like about him. You know, the question will be what they can put in front of him along the offensive line. They've got some pieces there. I think they need to get their best five in front of him. But I think wherever Bryce Young goes, he's going to have success, and Houston is a very good landing spot.
Yes, and I believe it's been a horribly kept secret that the Texans have been absolutely enamored with Bryce Young. And heck, they might not have even needed to trade up to one to get him anyway, because it looks like the Panthers are focused on another prospect. And what about Anthony Richardson? We mentioned the Panthers is another good fit for him, but a lot of people love his potential fit with Shane Steichen and the Colts.
Yeah, that's a great landing spot for him. I mean, we saw what Steichen did with Jalen Hurts. You could see a similar path. You know, it's almost in a way what we talked about with him potentially with the Carolina Panthers. You know, looking at what the Eagles did, how they used Jalen Hurts over the past 2 years, constructed a quarterback-centric run game, you know, last year and even, you know, this past season as well, that paid off with a run to the Super Bowl. And so I think Indianapolis would be a great landing spot for Richardson. Now, I think the question will become, all right, is it Sam Ellinger to start? Like, how are you going to get to Richardson? Are you going to start him week one? Maybe not. So that would be something they'd have to figure out. But I think Indianapolis would be a very good landing spot.
Oh, I completely agree. As long as they sign a veteran who could start in his stead for a brief time this season as he irons out some of his mechanical issues, that would be a home run landing spot for him. What about Will Levis? You mentioned the Raiders. Any other landing spots in mind for him?
I mean, you know, I know the idea of Carolina training up to one and then drafting Will Levis. It seems outlandish because he might be QB4 on many boards. But I do like, again, with what they've put around the position, I think any quarterback that ends up in Carolina is going to be in a position to be successful. And I think Levis would be successful if he ends up even drafted first overall by the Carolina Panthers. I do think that the Raiders would be intriguing because now with Garoppolo in place, you could bring it along slowly. You know, I know we're all sort of waiting on what happens with the Jets, what happens with Lamar Jackson, but the Jets, the Ravens, if things get wonky over these next 24, 48 hours, those would be some intriguing landing spots as well. And then, you know, you think about, okay, maybe we see Levis perhaps slide a little bit. You know, you look at maybe not at six, but maybe at 18, Detroit, with Ben Johnson, what he's done. Obviously, you have Goff in place, but, you know, Johnson showed last year the ability to get the most out of Jared Goff. I think you get a lot out of Will Levis as well.
Oh, absolutely. And another potential landing spot we have to discuss for a guy like Will Levis is the Seattle Seahawks. Yes, I love Geno Smith. Don't get me wrong. He was one of the most inspiring stories in the entire NFL in recent years, that he deserved the contract extension he got. However, if you are John Schneider and Pete Carroll, you have to be asking yourself this question. Yes, Geno Smith is a better quarterback than Russell Wilson is today, but will Geno Smith ever be as good as Russell Wilson was in his prime? That's not a slam dunk at all. And you might not be picking in the top five for a long, long time. And Pete Carroll, he's the unheralded quarterback whisperer. He just knows how to make lemonade with whatever lemon he trots out at that quarterback position. So Will Levis, give him a year or two to learn behind Geno Smith and then give him the reins there. I think that would make a lot of sense, wouldn't you?
I do think so, and it was very interesting in Indianapolis. Both Pete Carroll and John Schneider talked a lot about how, hey, we're usually picking in the 20s. We're not usually picking top five. And so we have an opportunity now to address the quarterback position. And John Schneider basically said, look, franchise quarterbacks don't grow on trees. And Pete Carroll said, we are very invested. We're completely plugged in into the quarterback market. Now, whether they're saying that because maybe a team wants to trade up to five, maybe, or maybe they realize that, look, we have an opportunity to draft our next quarterback, an opportunity that might not come along anytime soon. Let's stay here. If there's a quarterback we like at five, we will draft that quarterback. We don't have to play them right away. We can bring them on slowly. We can have patience, which is the other thing that Pete Carroll talked at length about, which was moving on from young quarterbacks early. He spoke at length about how teams need to be patient. Even fans need to be patient with young quarterbacks. You start connecting the dots. It makes you think that maybe they will, if they like the quarterback that's available at five, draft that quarterback and bring them along at their pace.
And what about the best possible team fit for Hendon Hooker? We had talked about some of the teams we already talked about, the Lions, the Falcons, the Seahawks, you name it. But what about the New Orleans Saints or the Denver Broncos even? I've heard both those teams really love Hendon Hooker based on reporting from Benjamin Albright.
Yeah, I mean, both of those teams would make a certain bit of sense. I mean, the obviously what the Saints just did with Derek Carr, and there's reporting out here, we're doing this on Monday night, and the legal tamper and the first night of the legal tamper window that maybe Jameis Winston is going to be
back there on a one-year deal.
And so, you know, maybe New Orleans is probably going to go with that quarterback room. Denver is an intriguing option. You know, they did just sign Jarrett Stidham. You know, but as a developmental option, Hooker could fit in both of those environments. And certainly, you know, he'd be learning under, you know, Pete Carmichael in New Orleans if he went there, who is basically a branch off the Sean Payton tree. So the fact that both of those franchises might be intrigued by Hendon Hooker makes you think that both those coaches who spent a lot of time together in New Orleans must be seeing the same things in Hendon Hooker.
Oh, absolutely. And last but not least, Tanner McKee.
Yeah, McKee's interesting because, you know, if this were 2005, we might be having the discussion that he's QB1. You know, he's 6'6". He looks the part of like Joe Flacco. But it's not 2005. It's a different NFL. He's more of that prototypical pocket passer type. But, you know, you look at a place like the Raiders in Las Vegas. You know, I think that's an offense that could potentially work. You know, maybe even Tennessee. You know, one of the sort of undercurrent conversations in Indianapolis was what's happened in Tennessee. Are they already out on Malik Willis? What are they going to do with Ryan Tannehill? You know, maybe that's a landing spot where, you know, you can get him into the environment, you can get him into the system, and maybe you have Tannehill for one more year, and you could see between Willis and Tanner McKee, like who ends up emerging as the quarterback of the future between those two. But, you know, there are some intriguing landing spots for McKee as well. I just think he might be perhaps in the wrong era of the NFL, because I think he's more of that prototypical pocket passer at a time when the game's trending towards athleticism at the position.
So in other words, Tanner McKee is the prospect that way too many wrongly thought CJ Stroud was earlier in the season.
I mean, I wouldn't go that far. But, you know, and it's weird. Like, there were like little flashes and glimpses where maybe there's some athleticism there, but you know, it's not to the extent where you'd say, you know, you're going to draft him in the first round. Like, I think, you know, if he can work on the mobility and get ahead of things with his mind and do the things pre-snap that will put him in a position to be successful post-snap, you know, it's a similar path to, say, Mac Jones. And I understand people will say, well, Mac Jones could draft in the first round. I think Jones showed a little bit more athleticism during his time at Alabama as a rookie than we've seen from McKee. And so there's a path to him, for him to be successful, McKee, but it's a thin path. He's got, you know, quite the needle to thread there.
He is Mark Schofield, ladies and gentlemen of SB Nation. Mark, it is such a fun time having you on here, and it just gets more fun every time. It really does. And I just can't wait to have you back on again. And that's it for today here on Sports Crunch, but we'll be back in just a few days with more of our 2023 Dash to the Draft position by position preview series, as my man Brian Bosarge of Deep Fried Draft joined us to break down this year's wide receiver class. So stay tuned. Also, be sure to follow me on Twitter at DCrom59 and on Instagram and now TikTok at SportsCrutch with DCrom. And remember, that's Crutch with a K. For Mark Schofield, this is David Cromwell saying so long, and please choose love, please choose compassion, please choose kindness, please choose selflessness, and please choose empathy, which are the core characteristics of the best teammates and teams in any sport. Until next time, cats and kittens, stay cool.